Welcome to the Only One Shot Studios, located in the great state of Mississippi. And that was Steve Azar, my dear friend, from his album Indianola. The song was The Coach. Check out Steve Azar on steveazar.com. Find out any of his music there. He's got some new stuff coming out. Check him out. My name's Jim Gallagher Jr. I'm your host. Played the PGA Tour from 1984 to 2000. Spent a few years with my family at home. Played a little part-time through that time and went out and played the PGA Champions Tour, and now I work as a golf analyst for the Golf Channel. You can find me on Instagram at Gallagher Jr. and on Twitter at Gallagher Jr. GC. So what is Only One Shot? Well, it's a book written by Vijay Trolio. He's the teaching professional at Old Waverly Golf Club in West Point, Mississippi. He's a top 100 teacher. Had a very successful playing career both in college and as a professional before moving on to the teaching side of golf. He's written three other books. And to me, folks, he's one of the brightest young minds in the teaching of the game of golf. Be my co-host in a few of our podcasts, and we hope to have a few special guests along the way. Basically, we're trying to get the word out on how elite, competitive, gritty, and healthy competitors are made. And it is my pleasure and honor to welcome my dear friend, Vijay Trolio. So, Vijay?
Thanks, Jim. That was really kind of you to refer to me as young. Youthful mind. Young mind.
You're 40 now, aren't
you? I'm 45 now.
Oh, 45?
Yes.
Have you been teaching that long?
Yes.
Gosh, you've gotten old. You're almost as old as me.
Oh, nearly.
That's not that. But, you know, we talked about you know, an accomplished player at the college level and pro level. Who and or what got you started in this great game?
The game got me started in the game. It sounds silly, but I was played tennis and boxed. I played soccer, and I was moving around doing all that. Must have gotten in trouble.
Mm. So is that why you had to box?
I ended up at Robin Hood Lakes Golf Club. Picking up pine cones for a penny a pine cone.
I love it.
And so being a tennis player, when I started chipping and putting and stuff, golf wasn't too hard. And then all the old-timers that were around, they would say, wow, you got talent at this. You can do this. You can do this. And so I just kind of started doing it. And
who was your biggest influence at that point? Just those guys around there? Was there any professional?
Roland Walker, a guy that worked for the Star City Water Department.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's
crazy. Just good old country guys that played a lot of golf.
Those are the guys you play golf with every day?
Every day. $2. Yeah, my whole game was built on $2 Nassaus.
Where'd you get $2?
Picking up the pine cones.
That's awesome. So you had that was your first job, picking up pine cones.
The first job was picking up pine cones, yeah.
You come a long way from picking
I
up
have,
pine cones.
I still shag balls now.
So. Oh, you do shag balls?
Yeah, I still shag balls.
You have to clean them and everything?
No, I don't have to clean them anymore.
They do that here at Old Waverly.
They do that.
Yeah, it's a top-notch club, no question about it. You played your college golf at Southern Miss. I mean, did you play a lot of junior golf growing up, or how did you get to playing D1 college golf? I mean, picking up pine cones, basically.
So I go to Laurel Country Club and shoot a bazillion. I still remember getting dropped off and shoot, you know, I don't know what I shoot, but I shoot a lot. I'm playing a Max Fly MD. A buddy of mine, Will White, comes up and says, hey, you probably need to switch to a Titleist and get away from the Max Fly MD. So I get away from the Max Fly MD and play junior golf every year after that. I played with Barry Bechtel in the U.S. Junior Qualifier at Hattiesburg Country Club. And I remember him complaining to the tournament director about how bad I was at golf. And then
really?
Yeah. And then 2 years later, I qualify. I win the U.S. Junior Qualifier.
Come a long way there.
Went a long way. And then I went to Bay Hill, played in the U.S. Junior, went to Bay Hill, made it to the round of 64, lost in the round of 64.
Wow.
Yep. And then went to Miami, played in the Orange Bowl, and finished in the top 20 somewhere. I remember that the last day, I shoot 41 on the back nine to shoot like 76, and Tiger Woods shoots 31 on the back nine to win by like six.
So you played in the same event as
he won.
With Tiger
Woods.
Yeah,
he won it. Wow. He won at Bay Hill, and he won it the Orange Bowl the year I played in.
That's awesome. I mean, not a lot of people can say that, no question about it. So
at least 144 other kids can say
that. Right. Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But then I started as a pine cone picker upper. No question about that. But tell us about college. I mean, what was that like? Because that had to be a big transition going from junior golf and growing up. You know
it as well as I do. But you know, you go from what everybody told me going in was you go from kind of a big fish in a small pond. So I was a good player in Mississippi, and then you go to college golf, and now you're a small fish in a big pond. And I've traveled. I made the first event as a freshman, and I traveled and played in every event as a freshman. My GPA reflected that.
Your scores, your GPA, there's some correlation
there. It's amazing I can still remember this. And I still remember going through study hall. And so I tell you, that's where it kind of started to break down because, you know, earlier I alluded to the idea that I built my golf game on $2 Nassau's.
Right.
So I'm not saying I was a big gambler.
No, but you learned to play under pressure.
We just played golf, played golf, played golf, played golf, played golf. Yeah. That's all we ever did. And so I get redshirted. Sam Hall's kind of impressed with the way I played golf. He redshirts me because the team's going to be young. He's got some new recruits coming in the next year. I dedicate myself to getting better at golf. I walk out on the driving range there at West Hills Country Club. So straight across the street from Van Hook, which was a university course in Hattiesburg. And I have Nick Faldo's Top of the World at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty close, but you didn't write a book.
Or read one.
Yeah.
For that matter.
So I kind of opened up Faldo's book that David Ledbetter and him, they had all these graphics in it and stuff. And I started hitting a lot of golf balls. And within 6 months, I was terrible.
At golf?
At golf.
Really?
Yes. And so, you know, there was this, I'd never really practiced a whole lot. I just played, chipped and putted. And then so when I started trying to get better at golf, I tried to go about the right way by following the instructions and the drills inside this book. But literally, I got terrible. And, you know, a million different swing thoughts or whatever. I don't even know what was going through my mind. But I knew that, A, golf was no fun. B, I was bad. And, you know, and Sam Hall, our college golf coach, he didn't put any pressure on me. But, you know, he was like, why don't you just go back to doing what you were doing before? And I was, you know.
That seems simple enough.
Yeah. And I said, well, yeah, but I do need to improve because I traveled as a freshman. But I think my best finish that year as a freshman might have been a 28th place finish or something like this. So I was still a long way away from the Tiger Woods, right, or the Matt Kuchars or the so I had my reasoning on why I was trying to get better at golf. It's just the way I was going about it wasn't helping at all.
Well, okay, so you're playing an individual sport, basically, and now you have to play a team sport. How difficult is that in college? Because they try to force that team chemistry, and you can't, you can't force chemistry.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you separate that from being, all right, it's me, but I want my team to win? How do you separate your roommate? You're trying to beat your roommate for a spot.
To me, it's pretty simple. It's not a whole lot different than, let's go back to the picking up the pine cones idea.
Right.
You know, I always worked on agronomy staffs. So I'd get to Castle Woods early in the morning later in my life, or I'd get to Robin Hood when I was younger. And they'd hand one guy a weed eater. They'd hand one guy that said, you go mow this, you go mow that. And everybody would go do their job. Well, if somebody didn't do their job, the golf course didn't look right.
Yeah.
But you still had to do your job. So I never really had any problem with playing as an individual. The only thing that I remember saying was that, like, don't be prideful. If you're playing if you're playing bad, you'd way rather stay at home and shoot your 77 where nobody would see it than you would, like, make a big noise about not getting chances to play and then going to play in the tournament and shooting 77. Because at the tournament, not only are you embarrassing yourself, but you're also hurting the team.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point, because I think a lot of kids struggle with that in college golf. Is or you're sitting at home. I mean, I want to play, but then you feel like, hey, wait a second, they recruited me, I'm good enough to be playing. You start complaining, and next thing you know, you have a pity party, and then you get into that mental downslide.
Sure.
And I think that's something you got to be aware of for college players. But you got better. I mean, because you continued to keep, as each year went by, you got better in college.
Yeah, I got really pretty good. I started using most all of my potential by my senior year. But, you know, kids, you know, junior golfers, kids, they have to mature and they have to learn that when they do go play college golf, yeah, you're there. You're a part of that team. There's only five going to travel. Mm-hmm. There might be 8 to 11 on the roster. But you just do what that coach recruited you to do, and you'll be fine.
You have a role, and you have to play it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have the superstar on the team. You're going to have the kid that doesn't swing at it great on the team, but gets everything up and down.
Right.
You're going to have the short knocker, the long knocker. You're going to have all these different situations. But at the same time, that coach recruited you to be a part of that program for that time period for a reason. And so when you get there, if you just stay true to yourself, you'll be fine.
That's great advice, because I think a lot of kids struggle with that, or they're the big fish, you know, on the junior tournaments. They're winning everything. They get to college and they struggle. Because there's, I mean, as you know, in college, I mean, it's time management. Small lessons in life. And I think everybody wants to practice. Everybody wants to be good, but everybody's good there. And I think people struggle with that. So you have this successful college career, and are you going to turn pro? I mean, what's the decision making there? You turn pro.
I started grad school, but so I still had some eligibility left by my senior year, and I finished halfway. I finished in December, so I start grad school, and I play too well. So I play too well to just continue grad school. I don't recall everything. I made it to NCAAs, so I was the first guy at Southern Miss to make it to postseason play.
That's awesome.
I made it to regionals. Sorry, NCAA regionals. Yeah. Postseason play. I was number one in our conference, and I was ranked top 30 or 40 in the country, something like this. Mm. So I was playing too well, right? To
finish school or concentrate on school.
Well, I was playing too well to finish grad school.
Right.
So I'd already finished my degree.
Right.
And so I went and played, and I got a Native American and a lawyer gave me $4,000 apiece.
So like a sponsor when people are looking, how do people get on tour or play professionally?
What found me was a Native American gave me $4,000 and a lawyer gave me $4,000. So I went out and played the Hooters tour with about $8,000 and had a good time, made about 20, I think. Vaughn Taylor had some really early success. I played college golf with him. Michael Connell had some really early success. Played a lot of college golf.
So how tough is it going, you know, now you're on your own playing for a living?
For me, it was the hardest transition ever because I didn't have four of the guys in coach with me.
Yeah, there you go.
It was just me and a 1996 Mazda 626.
Trying to fill up the tank with whatever you had. whatever, that's no question.
That's right. That was a really hard transition. It was back to the grindstone. It was a tough transition. But, it wasn't, again, good golf.
What did you learn during all that? What did you learn about yourself, about your golf game during that time?
The same thing I learned when I went from junior golf to college golf. Mm. The same thing I learned from when I went from Mississippi junior golf to the U.S. junior. You can be a really great player, and then there's another little piece of level up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another 5% out there that'll shoot some scores and do some things that are incredible.
Well, you've written three other books. You've written Only One Shot, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But tell us, you know, what are the other three books you've written? Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah. Castles Made of Sand, which was a book that ultimately became this one.
Okay.
So Castles Made of Sand was just a guide to parenting, trying to help parents think more like a coach.
Okay.
Instead of being so emotionally involved
tough
in their kid. It is. So hence I wrote a book. But anyway, Castles Made of Sand eventually got absorbed into Your Story, which eventually became Only One Shot. Trophy Man was a book written for kids, like junior golfers. You had Process Pete and you had Trophy Man. And so you don't want to be Trophy Man. You don't want to be doing all these things for trophies. I think everybody should want to win, but the emphasis should never be put in winning. You've got to have some kind of process out there that you're running.
So you know, that
control your expectations.
And you're a big Hogan guy. That was your other book.
I've always been enamored with Hogan, not because of how he swung it, not because of how he hit it, but simply because he would not quit.
That's true.
He just wouldn't quit, and he was. I think it's a great American story. I did write a book on Hogan's pivot and how he moved in space, just because of what he said in Five Lessons. Won't get into the details of it, but he talked about the pane of glass being shallower and tilted to the right, and and the way Hogan moved in space was a little different than what a lot of people thought he did.
Right.
So I thought everybody should know that, just for the continuation of the story of Hogan.
It was
a marvelous, marvelous, I didn't know him.
Right.
A marvelous American story.
Oh, absolutely. And a comeback story. I mean, we talk about Tiger Woods and his comeback. It's
Hogan
hard
had
beat.
Three of them.
Yeah.
Right. He came back from his father, tragic, suicide. Mm-hmm. He came back from that. He came back from the car accident.
Yeah.
And he also, before, in between those two, he came back from just being a poor kid where, he's out there caddying, trying to get good. Basically no chances until Marvin Leonard comes along. And then Marvin's like, hey, I'll help you out.
Yeah. So it's a great story. No question about it. I know most people are a fan. I mean, how could you not? You'd have a problem if you didn't.
Yeah.
But
if you like Santa Claus, you like Ben Hogan.
Exactly. So you said Castles in the Sand became only one shot.
Yeah.
Explain that to us.
Yeah, so Castles Made of Sand wouldn't go away. People would would email me, hey, you still got that book, you still got that book. So a publisher, a wonderful person, Susan Schott, approached me. I approached her some about what we could do with the book. And she loved it. She loved the idea, but it needed more to it. It needed a better story. And so at the same time, I was working on a book, as you know,
mm-hmm.
for you, because I thought your story was super cool and people could learn a lot from it. And so the two merged together. I sent both to her. She goes, I love it. Let's do it. And so only one shot.
I think you did a cool job with it. I wanted my dad's story to really be out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, because I think, you know, he was back in the day before video. I actually didn't see my golf swing till I think it was in college.
Yeah.
And I think the first time we met, you were shocked at what little I knew and still know.
What little you knew.
But, I mean, I was just one of those field players. I mean, you know, you talk about everybody out there and all the information that's out there. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, when you get started in golf, whether you're a junior golfer or an adult, there's so many confusing ideas. I mean, what's the process you recommend to someone? Let's just stick to junior golf because
yeah.
adults are
well, it's all in only one shot. But going back to great stories, your dad's a great story. Your dad shows up in Indiana basically on a five and dime ad in the back of a magazine, you know, and then he stays. He says himself he's a workaholic. Him and Janie, your mother, they do without things so that you and your brother and your sister can have these opportunities. And it's like, okay, great, I see it. You're a five-time winner on tour. You played in the Ryder Cup. It's like, okay, good. Now, like, how did he do that?
Yeah.
And so from a junior golf standpoint, the question was...
How do you get a kid started? I mean, basically, I mean, I know you get him started. You get him, or what age do you get him started? Because everybody asks me that same question.
Yeah, I mean, always, you know, you get them young, you get them started as young as you can. Always make sure that they're leaving the golf course crying. Not because you've screamed at them.
Because that happens 9 out of 10
yeah.
times. Yeah, just like you do.
So when the little young junior golfer, what I used to do with the boys was they had to get it over the fescue grass on 6 before they could play 6, 7, 8, 9. So uh-huh. we'd play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then it was like, please, Dad. And they'd all try to hit it over the fescue grass.
Well, we had Sissy's Ridge, which was then, oh, I can't, it's, you know, we're all politically correct now.
Yeah.
But we had Sissy's Ridge, which was a big gully. I'm thinking back then it was the 13th hole. Well, now, I mean, I can hit 7-iron across it or 8-iron,
right.
you know, when you look back at it. But right. back then, once you got, and you could sneak off a little bit more.
Yeah.
It kind of challenged you.
Yeah.
And when you got to think you had big britches, you tried to hit it over the big part, you're down in the gully, you make 7.
That's right.
So, but that's, I think that's so important. I mean, to get kids out there, I think even Johnny Miller said something about it. He'd let them throw rocks in the lake.
Sure.
But he got it to the point where they didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
And that's when you got them hooked. And I think all of us were like
My dad didn't play golf at all, but he did take me down to Hattiesburg
mm-hmm.
every year when they used to play the PGA Tour event.
Right.
And I was little, but he'd go down there and just he would walk around and watch pine cones fall. You know,
being a former pine cone pickup guy. No, that was the start of your
That's
pine
the start
cone.
Of my career. Right.
I lost
still
my mind
pick
there.
Him up.
But actually, I won that event. You know, back in '85.
I do know that.
You were how old?
I wasn't there.
Were you even born?
'85. I was born. I was 11. So I may have been there.
Because Faldo actually played in it one of the years, and I might even been that year. That I won because I flew in on a plane with him. It was either that year or maybe one of the years after that he flew in to play in the Magnolia Classic before he won the Masters. That's where it kind of got started, it was a cool tournament. For a kid, I mean, is that what you try to do to get your kids? You know, we have a tournament.
Well, that's a part of it. You know, access to the golf course, get out there, play golf with them, make sure that they're wanting to stay when you leave. And then also the taking them out there and letting them see the guys. I mean, I can still remember I would go watch people play at Hattiesburg, and then I always played better after I watched them play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you get whatever their timing in their mind.
Right.
You remember, I remember watching Payne Stewart in New Orleans and then coming back and stopping at the Bridges in Bay St. Louis and hitting pitches and chips, and I pitched and chipped it so much better just because I had that little tempo of his pitching and chipping in my mind. So anyway, long story short, get your junior golfers into it, not by taking them, getting them private lessons and driving range. No, it's like, no, throw them in the cart, take them out there, let them putt.
Like go to a baseball game. Like we take our kids to a baseball game, they get hooked watching
it. Yeah, let them putt and chip and then take them to some cool venue where they get to see some of the players play and you know, let God be the guide of it and you just sort of slowly give it to them, you know.
Okay, so we got our kids. We want them to play. I mean, where do you start equipment wise? I mean, how do you get them? Do you saw off clubs?
No,
you...
I wouldn't do that anymore. U.S. kids changed the game when we were younger. Just like you know, I had a set of Nomads. Mm. You know, they put all these little pieces together. My first set of clubs were Hogan Edges. They're like my first real set, but they were so heavy and big. And nowadays you have U.S. kids,
right? Which they can fit all sizes, ages.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. You go in there, you measure how tall you are, and you got it. You know, and you can get a putter, a 7-iron, a 3-wood, and a driver, or as my kids call them, hibers. You can get them a hiber.
Yeah.
You know. So start with a putter and a 7-iron and a wedge, and you know maybe a hiber and a driver, and then you know, Ping. I've been a ambassador of Ping for 15 years now. Mm-hmm. Ping's awesome because they will build anything.
Yeah, and they're very advanced. And a lot of companies now are trying to get into it, but I think, you know, U.S. kids really, they know they were light enough. Yeah. And eventually, they've got to get a little bit heavier so you can hit the ball a little bit further.
So when they get 8 or 9 years old, just take them to a club pro and get them fit for a set of Ping irons because they can make them light enough, flat enough, short enough. They'll do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're off and running.
Because we used to take our mom's clubs, cut them off. And heavy. The club swung you instead of you 100%. Swinging the club.
Yeah. And 7-degree wooden drivers.
And that's for another podcast, which we can definitely get into that. But one last thing on this, our first podcast, is boredom. You mentioned that in the book.
Yeah.
How do you keep kids from getting bored? How do you keep from, I mean, we all struggle as adults, but how do you keep a beginning junior golfer from being bored when they're trying to play golf? I mean, how do you keep that interest level going?
Make it, when you were talking about young junior golfer, make it just like the video games they play. So you have to get it over the fescue on number 6 before you can play 7, 8, 9. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to get 2 shots between over the bunkers on 9 before you can play 10, 11, 12.
Do you keep score?
Yeah, you can. I mean, of course, the kids are going to keep score, right?
Well, yeah, they are. With, against each other, too, and you.
Yes, but you know, make it like the games they play at home. You know, flavor it up with a little ice cream.
I was going to say, is there a reward?
100%.
The end of the rainbow?
Yeah, and then when they do start getting, you know, lessons, so to speak, you know, keep up with it. And make sure they're doing the stuff that the coach asks them to do. And if they do, you know, take them to, I want to say, Sonic. For a Sonic mm-hmm. burger. But, you know, I
Sonic
mean,
has
reward,
good ice cream,
yeah,
too. I'm talking about sweets more than I'm talking about real food.
Reward the kids. Make it like their game. Do not go out there and spend an hour and a half on the range trying to hit a golf ball and then go play 9 holes. Like, nobody will enjoy golf.
Okay, one last thing. Then we're running a little short of time here. But yardages as they get a little bit. At what yardage do you get the kids? You mean 50 yards?
You want their tee ball to cover 70%.
70%.
Of the overall length of the hole.
There you go.
So if they hit their tee shot 80 yards, let's say, well, let's make sure that all the holes are 200 or less.
There you go. That's great advice. Right. That's going to lead us into another podcast, too. Yeah. This is fun. But we appreciate your being on our podcast today. We look forward to further discussions, and we're going to talk about some more stuff that's in the book. And remember, only one shot. Where do you get the book, BJ?
Amazon. That's the place to get it.
All right, we're going to send it to my friend Steve Azar and let him take it away with our song, The Coach.
What were you thinking on that play? Take a lap and when you come back, maybe you'll do things my way. Let me tell you why, don't let things slide. If you can live through me, you can get through. What I say goes, 'cause I'm the coach.